Welcome to the Intersectionality Lab, a fair space to explore intersections.
Hello and welcome to the Intersectionality Lab podcast, the show where we discuss human rights and all things intersectional. I'm Anna Katarina, and co-hosting with me, we have Inga and Deborah. So, hi, how are you? We've not seen each other for a while in the podcast. How is everything going with you?
Good.
Also for me, good. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this new episode.
So we are relaunching our podcast, formerly known as Pink Talks. And this first episode, of course, we want to explore the theme of intersectionality and why it is important for us. But we also want to explain a little bit why we did this rebranding of the podcast. So Pink Talks started in 2021 and had a lot of sessions, especially during the pandemic years, and was super fun to do it. And we've learned like a lot. But in the midst of the process, we were thinking that we needed to change and do a little bit of a rebranding. So we changed the name of the podcast for Intersectionality Lab because we wanted to make and to have a title for the podcast that actually reflected the inclusivity of our talks and our discussions, either within ourselves or with hosts and co-hosts and guests that we normally brought to the episode. So we decided to do a hiatus and to rethink everything from the website. So in the website, you can find more resources, either with a marvelous and really thought out dictionary that we are revising and making it more friendly, more public friendly, and more inclusive also. So we are learning from our past mistakes, right? In the website, you can also basically find book reviews, movie reviews, essays. So the essays are going to continue also. And of course, our episodes, if you don't want to hear in one of the podcast platforms, you can also hear it in the website in itself. But rethinking everything, we also were thinking how to make the podcast a little bit more dynamic. So we have basically with the podcast, we have two types of episodes. One, it's like we started to call it for ourselves Unfiltered Sessions, and the labels took basically. So in the Unfiltered Sessions, we have a more relaxed discussion amongst ourselves about a specific subject, which, by the way, it's like the episode that we are having today, right? About a specific subject. And the other one is like the more classic episodes that everybody's used already with the Pink Talks. So we bring out a guest and we talk with them about like a specific subject. So that's mainly the main changes and why we did this hiatus, almost like I think a year that we stopped the podcasts. Of course, we continued with the public campaigns around different subjects on social media, but regarding the podcast and the website, we actually took some time to rethink everything and to make it as we think it can be a good tool to be conversation starters, and not only conversation starters, but also to help people to think and to reflect critically around subjects that we normally discuss. So I don't want to be more annoying than I normally am Just to finish this little intro, I just want to explain today's episode. So this episode is actually an unfiltered session, as I already mentioned, and that means that it's an unstructured conversation amongst the team of the Intersectional Lab about daily situations, current trends, our own experiences, books, movies. Actually, we came up with like a small segment at the end when each one of us will like, we call it the connect and reflect segment, where we share some of our readings or movies or whatever that we've read that we think it can be like something that for you, our listeners, can be of interest, basically. And so today's episode, it's an unfiltered one, and it's about intersectionality. So who wants to start to talk about what intersectionality is and to give an overview on intersectionality?
Yes, I can start after this really nice intro. And I just want to say I'm really happy to be part of this rebranding process of like rethinking everything. And I'm looking forward that it's starting now and keep publishing or continue publishing again. And first of all, maybe to start, before we talk about all the time of intersectionality, it's also nice to maybe frame our understanding of intersectionality, which is, I mean, based of a lot of scholars and what we read and our experiences, which we also talk about it later, especially in the Connect and Reflect segment, about the book Intersectionality by Patricia Hill Collins and Sirma Bilge, I don't know if this is the right pronunciation, which was written in 2016. And to introduce intersectionality in the whole frame that we are using it, it is more understood as a powerful and analytic tool that helps us to understand how different aspects of our lives, such as personalities or social positioning, like race, gender, class, sexuality, and many, many more, shape our daily experiences or overall experiences in our lives, including the challenges and also the privileges that we inherit in social systems, also in systematic inequality and power relations. And to say that intersectionality doesn't view these domains in isolation, so it's neither, it is more the interconnectedness of the whole, all of the systems. And intersectionality is kind of giving in more insights in people's everyday struggles and how the complexity of their experiences and the world in general and how we can understand it and also then take action. So intersectionality, as we use it and is also referred to, is more like seeing the social context and the relationality. So it's always crucial to consider the social and the historical context of each person and also of each system, and also for sure when applying intersectionality. And different societies and times have unique power dynamics, and so understanding how these dynamics operate helps to apply intersectionality in meaningful ways. And this idea of relationality that categories like race, gender, and class are interconnected rather than isolated. And as I said, it's more like a challenge, this either or way of thinking, and embraces in a more both and perspective. So, for example, a person that experiences racism can also experience sexism at the same time, and these experiences shape one another and are different from each person. And so to also say that intersectionality is not only academic or scholars would maybe could be understood as such, but intersectionality is should lead directly to social action, which is, it's a framework for addressing real world problems. Frame it like this, and it means like the inequalities in the world and the experiences again. But to be effective or to be truly effective, it needs a focus on specific contexts, as I just said, and also to avoid adding voices of marginalized and disenfranchised group as a token gesture, just to say like we are intersectional now and we take care of a lot of different voices, but then in the end you don't. So intersectionality also means that to rethink how we share and construct knowledge, and then also ensuring that by now now, missing voices or overheard voices aren't just included, but more like it's a reflective way and of reshaping conversations about certain topics, and include these one, the people that are meant by research, by knowledge production, by activism, and so on. So to summarize, addressing social inequality not automatically leads to social justice. So intersectionality's role in promoting social justice needs to be first critically examined to ensure it doesn't reinforce existing power dynamics. And then it is especially important when intersectionality is applied from top down, and then often with the risk of erasing the knowledge of, for example, indigenous people or from the global south. And to as I just said, it's really important to get in the conversations and connect with these communities and ensure that intersectionality is applied in ways that are inclusive and not non-exploitative. So in the essence, how we understand intersectionality, it gives us kind of a lens to see the world complexities more clearly and helps us to address inequalities while staying grounded in ethical, inclusive, and social justice practices.
Yeah, I do agree with everything that you've said. I've also read the book, and it was a really important book for me to even to structure my frame of mind and to put words on something that I already did, more or less, but not in such a pragmatic way. But like, I know that, Deborah, you also want to like talk a little bit about intersectionality in practice before we start to discuss with what everything is for us and how we arrive in intersectionality. I think it's like important to frame what intersectionality is by the scholars and before we start to talk about our own experiences. So do you want to like talk?
No, but it would be just like actually a comment on what Inga said, because it's really like I also really agree on what you said, Inga. No, this theory, like what was my concern, it was like, yes, intersectionality. No, in theory, we all know what is happening, right, with the scholars and authors and so on. But what was my concern is like what actually, you know, like in practice, what is happening in the research field, for example, or in the policy field, or you know, like in the practical world, what is happening. And actually, like, I came across like some articles that were actually like exploring and they were trying to apply, you know, the theory of intersectionality into various aspects of life. For example, like there was some this author, Micaela Petruso, she was actually exploring the intersectionality theory in like the, she was putting it in the practice of the violence against domestic violence for women of color. So she was saying like, actually we have an example of intersectionality for many, many reasons. And it touches many factors like gender oppression, okay, racism, and economic status, right? We can have, for example, we can make this example of these three factors that influence domestic violence, but not only domestic violence. But like what she was saying also in the article was like, for many, many years, we tried to help and to give tools to these people that were facing domestic violence, but we were doing it from our point of view, no, which was like white point of view. White female point of view. And we know that, for example, white women, they don't have the same they don't face the same discriminations as women of color do, right? So the practical way of it, it's like, yes, but in addressing the problem and in trying to give like explanation and solution to the problem, we have to address many, many factors that they and the intersection of these factors, right? So that was a very interesting article. Then I came across a more like in the research field. I came across this article that was trying to analyze intersectionality from the space, time, and context, right? So imagine like that the author are Maria Rodó de Zárate and Mareya Bailina, and they were saying that, ethnicity, gender, economic status, and everything, but actually we need to put these in the frame of in which time are we living the thing and in what space, because they were saying, for example, in the article, living in a city is different than living in more rural areas. For example, the opportunities that you have, they're not the same. So we have to address also and to take into consideration where are we living and when are we living, into like also like provide some solutions, because I don't know, opportunities of for example, let's stay in the same anti-violence spectrum, no? If I am a victim of domestic violence and I live in a city, of course I will have many, many more tools and many more organizations, no, that are based in the city. Unless I live in a rural area, I don't know where to go. It is possible that this area doesn't even have an anti-violence center, no? So it's very intricate. So not only theoretical parts or classifications, let's name them, no? Like the ones that you said before, Ingal, as ethnicity, gender, age, and everything else, but also like in which context are we putting these classifications, no? And how are we interacting within these classifications? Just to conclude, I came across this really nice article that was about research. How can we be more intersectional in doing research in the scientific fields? So because the theme, and I think that this is like a bit more also close to us, no, to our academic life, they were saying like, yeah, but social sciences, they always have the same target group. Right. So they are either like, I don't know, for depending on what's the topic and how to find the target, they are either, I don't know, like university students or a specific, like very tiny specific target group. No. And but we use those data to say something theoretical, right? And they were saying, like, why don't we try to think more intersectional also in doing research? So they were thinking about these participatory action researches, okay, that were a mix of qualitative and quantitative data, but it was more for the target group. So they were saying like, okay, let's address, I don't know, like a dynamic, like social dynamics, but let's address it with different groups, target groups, no? So let's include everybody meaning like differentiation of people and of lives into that same study. So we know that what we are addressing is actually not true just for a part of a population, but we can address also some differences, for example, no, that we can then theorize, and they can help us also like to broaden the view of the research that we are doing, no? So like how the dynamics affect also all frames of people, no? So actually to comment on this, I came across these really nice studies that were really intriguing, actually, and actually like a personal comment. I think that what you said, Inga, the fact that we risk to be superficial about the whole theme of intersectionality, no? That like sometimes it can become like a buzzword, like we say everything and nothing at the same time, no? And also I think that we need to like be actually careful not to address the topic and to address some topics within that, because like we have to start from a point of view that it's like, let's put an assumption, every point of view is different, no? I think we really need to be attentive, no, with these themes and addressing those themes. And I think that this is also one of the objectives of our renewal, mm-hmm. no, from Pintos to sessions, to be actually very sensitive and careful in addressing everything and trying to address those themes in the most like respectful way.
And not only that, but also giving voice to those people who are living. So instead of but that was, even with Pink Talks, I think it was always a concern of ours. So when we choose like an academic or someone to be our guest, we always have that in mind when we do the research to find someone. We try to find someone within the community. And so, because I always have this idea that although you may, as a white person, you may make an effort to be bias-free, you cannot be completely bias-free when analyzing a subject because you have your own cultural background on it. So hearing people who go through lived experiences or at least are from the community and are analyzing a community, for us, it's super important to give space and to learn from them. Because of course, these episodes, at least for me, these episodes, yeah, they are a form and a way for us to shed some kind of light about a specific subject. But it's also for me an opportunity to just shut up and listen. And it was super enriching for me about different topics and different subjects. Just like the action of shut up and listen. Do some questions, make some like questions, but let the other people like express, have their own arguments and their own train of thought around the specific subject. So
yeah, that I think also for me, because intersectionality in the beginning was a theory that I learned in university or came across in books or in papers or whatever. And with the last 3 years, it also came more into this connection of it's social action and or should lead at one point also to social justice, but it's not necessarily just because all, I think in the moment it's more like everyone used this term, even such as diversity, everyone used diversity and intersectionality without really thinking about what it really means. And it remembers me because when I started with my master's thesis, I was talking about giving voices, and then the supervisor told me, like, Inga, you don't have to give anyone a voice. You can just use your privilege to make these voices heard, because a lot of people already have these voices. And as you said, no, opening space and giving space and just listen to experiences of the people you tend to talk about from your perspective and your positioning, your social positioning, and you always have a bias in your perception. This is how our mind works, not how we are socialized, but somehow this step back and listen to the people that can talk about their experiences and their knowledge, and also connect theory, but also like intersectionality theory was maybe one thing when it went to academic, but it was happening before a lot, like years and years before. So that was also super interesting for me to step back and learn how to step back and even continue learning stepping back.
Can I would like to put a question for you too, but of course I will answer for myself also at the end. Do you think that learning about intersectionality somehow shaped your personal view on the world and how you present yourself to the world today?
Who wants to answer first?
I'll go last because I was the one who made the question.
Okay, I will go first then, because I have, every time I think about it, I think also about, I related it very much to my job, no? It's, as Inga, I learned about this, let's call them social theories, okay? I learned about intersectionality as a social theory. And at the beginning, I was like, okay, but okay, we know, no? For our academic background, we know that people, they function in groups with classifications and with forming groups and with tackling the similarities and diversities, no? That's how we function. But the thing was like, okay, intersectionality, but very abstract for me. I know that I'm a woman. I know that I'm white. I know that I'm Italian. I know that I'm a daughter. I know, these classifications I know, and I do recognize somebody that is white, Italian, woman, daughter, and everything from somebody that is not. But then I came across like theorizing in my mind, no, I came across this fact of, but okay, so if we are so complex, no, we have many, we fall into many categorizations because we have also like points in common with other people, like so many points in common. So that means that we are made of a variety of, I will call them systems, no, but it's like a variety of factors that contribute to shape us and to define us. And it's like if we are made out of these many, many factors, so then probably this is something that we also have to consider for other people, right? So like if we consider that, okay, we are both women, for example, and we are both from Italy, we know that there might be some points in common. And this is crucial when you think about other people and, for example, like the age they have, the country they are from, the actual context, where do they live? That's why I really like that article that I read, no, about the context and the timing, no. So this is something that you always have to deal with. So I started putting it in practice, not this theory that was so abstract for me. I started putting it in practice also in my job, considering actually everything that is a factor for the other person. So like age, something particular with that age that I might know, or country of origin, or actual context of living, or gender, or sexual orientation, everything, right? So this way, it's a way that I found to be like incredibly helping and useful in order to have a broader view with like your approach with people. I don't know if it makes sense what I just said. Like in my head, I have it very clear, but I know that it can be a bit tricky to understand.
No, but I totally agree what you just said. And I would add that for me, it's also, sometimes it can be also, I mean, of course it gives you the tool and this lens of like, okay, also how you approach people. But then on the other hand, sometimes I feel like it's also quite overwhelming because when you start understanding how connected everything is and you have these theories in your mind and then you see the actual realities and then connecting this and then also seeing that there are so many different layers and dimensions and system can also, for me, it was at one point or sometimes it still is quite overwhelming because I'm a person that always tried to think about solutions and then you see like there's by now not a concrete solution or like a simple solution, but it is also, it really helped me to understand, to not take anything for granted. So also not the experience of another person. Even you're in the exactly same situation and you experience this same situation differently. And for me, it's also sometimes shocking that even I would say I'm aware of a lot of things, I still have a long, long way to go to understand also like how the way I talk can influence people, the way I choose my words can hurt people and make like produce harm, even though, and it's not about like you're not producing harm, it's more like you reduce the harm that you're kind of reproducing over the in social interactions as well. So for me, intersectionality, coming back maybe to your question, to say like if it changed how I behave or how I behave, I would say in some way, but like with a lot of different factors, but also in some way that I'm more conscious about how I, even though I'm not interacting, how I am positioned in like even walking down the streets, how I am perceived, and that my the perception of me and also how I perceive other people is not always the same. So as you said, no, Deborah, like it's also a lot about social context and time. And so being more aware also of your kind of what you reflect from society, even it doesn't matter how many theories you read, how many books you read, at one point you're just reproducing a system or like also oppressive system. So, and you also have to stand this sometimes guilt or shame that I sometimes feel as a white positioned person, because I have these privileges and I know to a certain extent which I have, but then to a lot of things I'm not even aware yet. So I think this is, I'm more careful and more quiet in social situations maybe due to that I know that I have no idea how it must feel like in the moment.
For me, it was almost like a natural progression from the education that I had. I was really privileged by the dad that I had, who installed in me this specific tool of seeing the world. So sometimes when you're little, it's a pain in the ass when you go to your parent and you just want to know something like about the specific subject, and your parent, basically that's what my dad did to you, to me. He was like, okay, so you have to read this book and this book and this book, and then we will discuss it. And through those discussions, I've learned a lot of things, but he would like basically give this overview. Yeah, so you're reading this like subject through this lens, through this economic lens, but you can also read it through the historical context, through arts, through social justice. And so he basically installed in me when I was a young girl this way of seeing the world that was almost multidimensional. And in that time, I don't think that he had any way of reading about intersectionality, right? It was just like the way that he saw the world, because his background was in philosophy and history. So I think like people in philosophy has these like, it's almost like psychologists has this somehow more flexible way of seeing and putting in themselves in the other people's shoes, because you can argue and counter argue and understand different in multiple perspectives. And so I think that what he basically installed in me, but I grew up with this way of trying to see a specific event through multiple lenses. But and it was super helpful, actually, in an academic term, right? Because I could like connect threads that other people could not connect, like in the first glance. It was super helpful. But actually was when I started to do this kind of work within the young educators that I came across the Crenshaw's article, right? And like just like a bulb just went out in my mind, basically. I was just like, oh yeah, so I have these tools that can be refined and I can learn because more in depth about this theory, but this is like the natural progression of what was installed in me when I was a young girl, right? So it was just like a revelation moment for me. And I just like, I needed to consume as much as possible about intersectionality because it made completely sense for me. It was basically putting a word in something that was already designed within me and like trying to refine it. And like for me, I think like the crucial thing that both of you put out is this, and it's a life learning experience. You just cannot like read about the concept and think that you can apply it automatically. It's like a daily practice that you need to do, basically. And it needs to be done daily until the rest of your life, because people are diverse, situations are diverse, culture is diverse. And so it's also a tool for me to question myself. When I take a stand about something, I need, like Inga said, I need to analyze, okay, so but what is my privilege here? Because me as a white woman, I have an enormous privilege compared to other women, right? And how can I shift some of this privilege to them? It's like, it's something that also intersectionality brings me, because it can also bring another thing that I think is crucial, especially nowadays. It's the possibility of community, of a diverse community where we can make everybody's lives better and more fulfilling. Of course, and Inga, I completely agree with you. Sometimes it's overwhelmed because you start to analyze stuff and see that so there's so much problems in different areas. But somehow, me thinking about intersectionality, it's a valid way. It's almost like embracing a life philosophy, right? It's a theory, but it's also practice. And with life philosophies, you will practice it for the rest of your life. And I think like what it can bring, it's like it's the ability to have a life when you are constantly learning from everybody, from different types of lives, different age gaps. Everybody has this input. And I think it's for me, maybe this is utopic or irrealist for my part to think about this, but I think it's the way to make the world better, basically, because we came from an era and a time when we think that we want to help everybody, but it was almost always from a place of savior complex. And intersectionality basically states, no, you need to chill out a little bit, because people who are in those situations, they know better than you what they need to get out. And you are here to help. You are not here to lead. Everybody leads in that sense, right? So for me, intersectionality, it was a little bit of a progression from my education, but at the same time, it was like a revolution that I carry with me daily. And sometimes it's like hard, because sometimes I need to confront myself with why I have like a certain view. And I don't know, I think human beings don't like to be told that they are wrong. But intersectionality sometimes tells me that I'm wrong and I need to deal with that, basically.
Yeah, I also have the feeling that it's all about awareness, right? Once it's this awareness for like different type of stuff, it's installed in your mind, you will constantly have the doubt. You will always put that little seed of the doubt that can be overwhelming, especially, you know, if you are doing it with everything. But then at the end, like, you will, like, there is gonna be like a way in which you will consider the doubt and process your own thinking about it, no? So it is true, it's a constant learning process. And it's I do think that once you have this awareness, you will do it for everything.
Yeah, I do agree that Yeah, I think that, for example, another thing that I would really like to for us to delve a little bit more, but I think that we've already talked about in from a personal sense, is that is intersectionality as a tool for dealing with practical issues. What do you think? Is it a good tool, or do you think it muddles a little bit some subjects? Because I have a really particular view on this, but I really would like to hear from you. So do you think that intersectionality has merit to deal with practical issues or not?
Can you define practical issues? Just
for example, even what we do in our own jobs, like trying to raise awareness to some subjects for hate speech, for extreme right-wing systems, or even practical issues regarding violence against women. Because we normally talk a lot about violence against women, but we sometimes skip that the LGBTQ community also has issue with violence between partners, for example, right? And it's a subject that is not really talked about a lot. So do you think that when for example, governments are designing the laws and are designing strategies to deal with a subject, do you think that intersectionality is of use, or it's like more problematic to deal with this?
I think it can and should be a very valid tool, especially also in politics. But because I think often the problem, or not the problem, but the problem is that it is often talked about like more the symptoms of something. For example, there are issues in the country with housing prices. There are issues with in the country with employment or whatever. But it's sometimes when laws and new regulations are designed, it's not really thought through the dimension of everything, how it ended up there. So kind of the roots of problems. So, and for that, intersectionality could be and should be a very necessary tool to see like who's affected by this, and not only by this, but like how it contributes and maintains social inequalities. So more like, but if you use intersectionality, for example, in politics, it needs to rethink everything. And I think this is often not happening, and also sometimes a task that is immense, but it should be like, that's the way how it should be, to really think about what are the experience of the people in a country or in a certain group. And then also think about, okay, gender-based violence, it's not only women experience gender-based violence, like mainly LGBTQ people, trans people, non-binary people. And then also like, for example, their economic situation because of discrimination in the labor market, or like it should be like this chain of really thinking of, okay, this is one problem, and what are kind of the subcategories or roots of everything. And for this, I think intersectionality could deal with practical issues. And I mean, in the end, that's, I mean, how more practical it could be to really tackle roots of problems and saying like, where, what are the different discriminations and the different privileges and the different challenges each people face, and then also how to tackle them. And if you tackle one problem or one root, it doesn't erase the other problems, and maybe even maintaining or continue maintaining two social issues. So in my perspective, yes, it can be sometimes also then a bit difficult to, if you write down all the interconnected issues somehow, then like, okay, where to start? But I think if you really think it through and on a rational level, you will get the answer of like where to start, because then you come to the root and say like, okay, if we start tackling this at one point, other problems will also develop in a different way.
And how about you, Deborah?
I was thinking to the difference between equality, equity, and justice, no? As I really see intersectionality as a tool, as Inga said, as a tool to tackle, to identify the source of injustice and the source of inequity, right? But it means also giving different tools to people. So if you start from the analysis, no? So like, for example, equality is like, okay, everybody gets the same thing. Equity is everybody gets the thing that they need. So maybe one needs, something that the other one doesn't need. But then justice, what it is to identify the source of inequity, right? That everybody has different stuff and we don't really know why or how come or everything. So like, if we tackle first the source of this inequity, I think that this is really, really complicated argument and a very complex process. So I am the first one that like is just thinking about that. I don't have I'm not able to go so far with the thinking, for example, no? So I know that in order to, for example, the example that you gave, Katarina, is like, okay, how would a government do it, no? Me, I have no idea. Just know that doing this thinking that we are either all equal or all with different needs or... But putting everything always together, it always has some critical points. Why, like, if we analyze first and then after the analysis, no, it's also about taking time, shutting up, listening, taking time, really analyzing stuff, and then like give a contribution that would be like a bit more aware.
Yeah, for me, I think like the first step, it's always to analyze things and to think. And I think like to do an analysis for practical issues, like, for example, the way that governments find solutions for problems, it's a really, really powerful tool, of course, because when you design something, we can aspire to perfection, but we have to be humble enough to say that we will never attain perfection, right? With anything that we did, even in our own academic like backgrounds, we have this experience. When we write a thesis, basically we strive for perfection, but at some point we need to deliver the thesis and to be judged for it. And we know that it's not perfect, but it's like the best thing that we've done, and we will get feedback and how to improve it. And even if we change things in our thesis, it still will be lacking something, right? So perfection, for me, it's unattainable, but you can strive. It can be a guide, a good guide for us, right? And I think like intersectionality has this power. We can strive to be better, to be, I don't like the word perfect in these things, but we have to assume that the solutions that we are going to design, it's going to be imperfect, but we have to be open to criticism to make them better on the second run and on the third run, right? Or in the more runs. But if we start with an intersectional analysis, I think it's like, it's the most powerful tool that we have right now to design something that can be equitable, that can actually help people and at least diminish some inequalities, right? And that's like, maybe it's like unrealistic from my part, but I always have, it's something that I have to deal. I was born with it. I will always strive to make things better, even if things are not. But I think like for me, it has a practical use in that sense. I think like the major problem is for people in power to understand that the power, it's not their own. It's especially if you are living in a democratic society, is from the people. And they actually started to use it as a tool for serving the people, right? I think that's the most problematic thing right now. It's to get politicians and to get governments to familiarize themselves with this tool, and second, to put it in use, basically. But yeah.
I agree. Well, I think that we will have a lot to talk about in our episodes. Like,
Yeah. So before we go to the connect and reflect segment, what each of one of us is expecting with this new phase of the podcast and of the intersectionality lab? So new phases and new possible challenges that you think that this new rebranding will bring for us?
I would say the same as the other one. No, but just because, like, I have the feeling that it's a learning process. No, I have the feeling I'm growing up, and my knowledge is growing up, and my awareness is growing up. And of course, like, for how much you grow, I don't know. I have the feeling you have like a lot of steps, and with different levels. No, so I remember when I started the Pink Talks, I was at a level, and now, of course, like, conversations and things got like to another level, no, to a higher level. So I expect like the continuing, no, of this growing process, but of, difficulty levels.
But are you excited?
Very, very much. See. Because it's it is really a learning process.
And what about you, Inga?
Yeah, I also thought, my first thought was also about the learning process, that I'm also excited of, like, even see go more into deeper levels. And then on the other hand, also getting more into conversations also with the team, no? Because we are all on different levels of awareness of whatever phases we face in our life. And so also getting more into this reflection and sharing knowledge and experiences. And then on the other hand, for me, it's also that we are more, I guess, or I hope that we are more open to receive criticism, and then how to take this criticism and step back and say, like, okay, and then next time you do it a little bit different, and maybe this helps already. Or then you start reflecting of why you are defensive, or why you feel like you have to defend yourself, but then how to learn to not defend yourself and just accept that this is a valid point, for example. And yeah, so I also hope that with the rebranding and everything, we also get more feedback and critics and positive and negative feedback and everything from the people who listen or to who read the dictionary, and then what the team makes out of it. So I'm excited.
I'm also really excited for this new change and this new phase, because it was just like what Deborah said. We started with this like crazy idea, just like, let's do like a podcast and talk about things that are interesting for us, and then we learn so much that at some point I felt the need, no, but we need to do this a little bit different, because not only it's a tool for us, but it can be a tool for other people. Even if they don't know like about the specific subject, it can be a stepping stone, right? And I'm super excited, because actually one of my main life goals is to be like a life learner. So I want to be in my 90s learning new stuff and be excited for new stuff. And I think like conversations, either with guests or with amongst ourselves, it's there are opportunities, like you said, Inga, to reflect, to take a step back, to try to see things from another perspective. And another thing that I think, like, this past experience, and I hope within this new phase it will continue, it's the sense of community that we've managed to find with our conversations, right? So yeah, we are almost finishing, but not before we start this new segment, Connect and Reflect segment, where we are going to share some stuff that we've discovered, and we hope that our listeners also be intrigued by them. So Inga, do you want to like start with your Connect and Reflect?
Yes. So I mean, like, I think for me, and maybe for you also, but it was my one main resource I used for the preparation for this conversation was the book I already mentioned, and I think we put it anyways in the references. So it was the book about intersectionality from Patricia Hill Collins and Simone Bilgen. And I think the book is a really, really good entry into intersectionality because it gives an overview of a lot of scholars, which are even unknown, at least from my perspective until then, besides the mainstream and the most common ones that wrote about intersectionality. And it gives a good connection between this theoretical perspective, which was an important part, but also this activist perspective, and then give practical examples and connect everything to activism, to social justice, and to a lot of different social issues. So I think it explains also well how the power dynamics intersect in a complex way, and which sometimes go from global protests, but then also to some cultural phenomena, and even connecting hip hop and intersectionality. So it's really broad. But I also think that it's like an entry point to dive or start diving into intersectionality, but then it doesn't give practical applications. In a sense, it gives examples, but not like, okay, and what now? How to engage in intersectionality now? So I think, as I said, it's a good starting point. And then afterwards, the practical implications and diving in can start. So I would really recommend reading this book.
I also liked it a lot. But my connected reflect recommendation, actually, it's a movie. It's called The Glorious. It was made in 2020 by director Julie Taymor. And it stars Julianne Moore, Alicia Vikander. And it's the story about the feminist icon Gloria Steinem, her childhood and the way that her childhood influenced her life as a writer, an activist, and an organizer for women's rights worldwide. But what I think, I really like the movie, and I think it's a good entry point for somebody who wants to understand more about women's issues. But I think it's like, it gives a practical view on the importance of intersectionality, because at some point in the plot of the movie that actually happened, it's like an historical event. They had a feminist rally, and on practical terms, they saw the diversity of issues that different groups of women had and the differences of needs that each group had. And she had to dealt with that, right? And I think it was like a really beautiful movie. It's a movie that it's like accessible to everybody. It's not like one of those movies that are hyper artistic or something, but it's really, really interesting, actually. One of my favorite quotes, it's from the movie, actually. It's from an Irish taxi driver that he basically said, if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament. And I think like it was like a really like quotes, like it was like, yes. So and what about your recommendation?
Yeah, I would actually recommend that article that I was telling you before about, the one, it's called Intersectionality in Feminist Geographies by Maria Rodó de Zaratea and Marie Bailianab. And because it's, I just found it like very on the spot, you know, like it's an article of about 6 pages, but it really like applies geography's theoretical development on space and time to intersectionality studies. So I found it like the missing part of the, like, for the overall theory, you know, so like the different perspective on the relation between categories, power relations, and space and time. So like it really like for me it was like that, it really broadened my vision, no, to like a more contextualized understanding of the dynamics. That's why I would recommend it. But anyways, I would put the references, all of the free articles. So
we will have it in the website, in the page for this specific episode. We will leave every time that we publish like an episode, we also have like recommendations and resources, and with the Connect and Reflect segment, we will also do the same, of course. So my loves, because you are both my loves, we are finishing today's episode. I'm super excited for this new stage, and I was really happy to start this new stage with both of you. Thank you so much for being here. Before we go, do you want to say something? Are you good? Okay, so I will wrap up the episode. And that's it for today. We hope and we would really love to hear your thoughts on this topic. So please leave us a comment down below. And thank you so much for listening to the Intersectionality Lab podcast. And we hope to see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab. If some terms or topics made you curious, check out our website. Maybe some of the resources will keep your thoughts rolling. Meet us where the lines cross. We are a non-profit research center working on human rights, gender equality, and active citizenship. And this podcast was created with the support of our team.